Welcome to the Proceedings Podcast. I'm Bill Hamblett, the Editor-in-Chief of Proceedings at the U.S. Naval Institute, and today is Friday, April 5th. In this episode, we're going to talk about writing. Today's episode is brought to you by Valetta Industries. Valetta Industries is a premier maritime and tactical training company founded and comprised of former U.S. Navy SEALs. They offer best-in-class trainers for the Department of Defense and local law enforcement. The Valetta team has a passion for instructing and continuing to support the mission of active duty personnel and first responders by lending their hard-earned experience to those brave Americans who still serve. If you're a government contractor looking for a great partner for your next big project, Valetta Industries is an SBA-certified Hub Zone and SDVOSB company. Valetta Industries, we solve problems. To learn more, go to www.valettaindustries.com. All right, back here at the Naval Institute, we have a few exciting events coming up here. On Wednesday, April 24th, in the Jack C. Taylor Conference Center, we'll have a panel discussion on warrior women at 1400, inspired by the new Naval Institute Press book, From Yeomanettes to Fighter Jets, A Century of Women in the U.S. Navy. The event will feature a panel of distinguished female naval officers and seek to offer a range of historical and present-day perspective on women's naval service. And then on the 8th of May, we'll host our annual meeting starting at 1600. We will recognize essay contest winners and our authors of the year. We've invited Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Eric Smith, to be the keynote speaker. Both events will be broadcast live if you can't get to Annapolis to attend them in person. To find out more, go to usni.org/events. All right, now for our guest. Joining me today is a very successful writer with a new book out about how to be a successful writer. George Galderisi is a retired Navy captain who started writing for Proceedings more than 40 years ago, and he's been a successful fiction and nonfiction author, including the author of many books over the years from the Naval Institute Press. George, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Bill, thanks so much for having me on the show. And it's really a joy to be talking with you and to talk about writing. It's something I'm passionate about. That's why I'm still doing it all these years since my first article in the Proceedings in 1978.
Well, we had on the show a couple months ago, we had David Poyer, who's the author of all those Dan Lentzen books and so many books about the Naval Academy over the years. I described him as prolific, and I would describe you, George, as another prolific author. And you've had a very successful career with both fiction and nonfiction and magazine writing as well. So you've co-written with Kevin MacDonald a new book. It's titled Brave Ship Writers Share Their Secrets, How to Write Books People Actually Read. So let's start with the basics. What prompted you to start writing in the first place?
So I was blessed, not to get all misty-eyed about it, I was blessed to have good commanding officers that who encouraged me to read professional magazines like Proceedings and War College Review and Joint Forces Quarterly. And then I'm from New York City, so I have an opinion. So I thought, well, I have some ideas and I'd like to get them published. So so I submitted to Proceedings first and had a very wonderful editor, Fred Rainbow, who was able to take my somewhat awkward prose and coach me into being a better writer. So that's how I started with articles in professional magazines, and did that for quite a while.
And then how did you make the jump to fiction?
So, the old saying is you make plans, but God laughs. I had done some nonfiction books on Law of the Sea, something I was passionate about. Actually, my first article on Law of the Sea was co-written with your former chairman, Admiral Jim Stavridis, in the Naval Law Review about Law of the Sea and why the U.S. should sign up with it. So I've been doing articles for quite some time, and again, two nonfiction books on Law of the Sea. And then my best friend in the world, who I went to high school with, is a very successful screenwriter in LA. His name is Bill Blyke. And he and his wife have no kids, and they would visit us frequently. They live in Santa Monica. And Bill was down visiting once and had a laptop before anyone else had laptops. And our kids, who were in middle school, said, "Well, Mr. Bill, what are you doing?" And he said, "I'm writing a screenplay." And he said, they said, "Oh, can we be in it?" And he said, "Sure." So they were in a TV thing he did. So later that day, we were watching it, and I hope no one listening is related to him and friends with him. Steven Seagal, we were watching this wretched Steven Seagal action movie, all kinetics, no plot. And I said to my friend Bill, "Well, why don't you write a screenplay and do something better?" And he said to me, "Well, why don't you write a novel?" And I got a little huffy and said, "Well, I don't do that. I do professional articles and I do nonfiction books that are scholarly." And you know how it is when a friend is kind of poking you. He held my hand, and I did my first novel in 1996, and then just fell in love with that genre and kept writing.
Fantastic. So I got to ask, did you have any formal writing training at any point in your career? And if you did, or if you didn't, do you think it's necessary?
So Bill, when I attended the Naval Academy from 1966 to 1970, that was the height of the Cold War and the Russian Bear. And we were all very well schooled in technical subjects. And I think I took maybe one or two English courses. Everything else was technical, because that was what we needed to do to beat the Russians. So no formal training. And that's why I treasure my relationship with editors who were like Fred Rainbow, who were kind to me in the beginning and coached me to become a better writer. So I think midshipmen at the Naval Academy today are getting more well-grounded in skills that would help them be writers.
Gotcha. Well, Fred Rainbow, I'll give him a shout out as well. He's my predecessor as the editor-in-chief of Proceedings. And when I was a lieutenant and wrote my first Proceedings article, Fred was my editor, and he brought me along. And then he suggested that I try for the Naval Institute editorial board. And so I served on the editorial board, and I kept writing for Proceedings. I was not nearly as prolific as you have been, but Fred definitely helped develop another, junior author, somebody who had not thought about writing, and then, you know, somebody spurred me to do it, like you, and did a little bit of it, and have trying to pay it back now from this position, right? Working with new young kids who send us manuscripts and articles, and we give them a lot of feedback, and I've got a team of editors who are better than I am at helping people, you know, get from a rough manuscript to a published manuscript. It's very, very satisfying. George, how about your Navy career? So you were a helicopter pilot. Later on, you were you commanded an amphibious ship. You commanded, I think, a Fibron before you retired. So did your Navy career help you with getting ready to write, you know, military technical thrillers, that kind of genre?
No, it sure did. I mean, the old saying is write what you know. And so I spent the first two thirds of my career in the rotary wing community, had two command tours, HSL 43 and 41, flying the H-60. And then when you get to a certain point in your flying career, you stop flying and you do something else. So as you said, I went to the amphibious assault Navy, one ship and one squadron. And then I spent my last 5 years on active duty as a chief of staff for a carrier strike group. And concurrently with that, I led the U.S. Navy, the U.S. delegation for mill-to-mill talks with the Chinese Navy under something called the Military Maritime Consultative Agreement. So to answer your question directly, my first several novels stem directly from my Navy experience. I wrote The Coronado Conspiracy, which centered around drug ops in Latin America. When I commanded USS Cleveland, we went through the Panama Canal four times doing drug ops in the Eastern Pacific and the Caribbean. And then from my experience as chief of staff for a carrier strike group, my second novel for Duty and Honor was centered on a carrier strike group in the Arabian Gulf. So, I'm probably more so than others wedded to writing about things I know. You don't have to look a lot up. You're leveraging your experience. So that's, I think there's a very close parallel.
That's great. So this new book about writing, Why'd you write it? And is it a book for beginners, for emerging or experienced writers, or for all of them?
Yeah, so walking it back, I mean, I've lived in the Carnot community for decades. I've done book talks, book signings, book seminars, and so people kind of know that I do that. And I'd encounter folks in the line at the supermarket, and the conversation usually started out with, well, I've got a great idea for a novel or something like that. And so I would do that, and then, you know, being a naval aviator and living by a NATOPS checklist my whole career, I said, there's got to be a better way to do this than randomly encountering people. So I did for 4 years with Carnot Adult Education, I did a 6-part, 2-hour seminar series on writing. Mm-hmm. And it was well attended. People liked it. We kept doing it year after year, and then COVID hit. And then I thought, well, I'm only touching so many people doing this. So I teamed up with a gentleman who was a junior officer on my squadron years ago, Kevin McDonald. And we said, well, now we can reach more people and help them with the writing. And to answer your question, it's for beginning, emerging, and accomplished writers. And we've just taken not just our skill set, but the other authors, the other writers in the Brave Ship cabal. It's a micro publisher. We've got about 20 writers, and most of them have contributed a sidebar where they talk about their experience. And one of our fellow writers is a former Marine sharpshooter, and he reached out to General Mattis and got some information from General Mattis about his writing and his love of the written word. So that's how the book evolved.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I was reading leafing through some parts of the book last night, and I saw the stuff referencing General Mattis and how he thinks about literature and the importance of reading. And he was a keynote speaker at one of our events back in the fall. And, you know, every time I've ever seen him talk, he talks about the importance of reading, about reading voraciously, about devouring books, about, you know, the importance of that to your professional development, the development of your intellect. And so I was very glad to see that was in the book as well. So tell us a little bit more about the Braveheart Consortium, if you will. I'm not sure what exactly you call it, but you referenced 20 or so writers. So you're as a group combining efforts. Do you have a small publishing house? Where's that going?
Yeah, so this enterprise was started by two fellows, one a retired Navy guy and the other a fellow with a PhD in economics from University of Pennsylvania. And their business model, Bill, is that we as writers, we're the content providers. In other words, we write a manuscript, they publish it, they do all the back office stuff, and I'm happy to talk about that. And then the other half of the business, Matt, the guy with the PhD in economics, he's gotten venture capital money, and he uses what we write to pitch these stories to movies, to television, to video games, et cetera, et cetera. So it's kind of a two-pronged effort. And, you know, it seems to be working. The fella, the Marine sharpshooter I mentioned, Ted Nolte, had his book, The Locker, picked up by Fox Searchlight. So they're going through what the movie business calls a development hell right now, but it may see the light at some time. So that's the model. And we, you know, and all of us write thrillers. That's kind of the entry point for people who are, you know, auditioning to be writers with Brave Ship. And so we, you know, we beta read each other's stuff. We give advice. It's just a group of fellow travelers that's nice to have as your posse.
Oh, that's great. So give us an example or two of the kind of advice that's in the book.
Yeah. So, again, we're kind of the advice in the book is primarily crawl, walk, run. And going back to that example I gave you for the supermarket, you know, people, I run into, you run into, say, well, I want to write a novel. And then the question you ask is, well, have you written anything before? And the answer is no. So we advise aspiring writers, particularly beginning and even emerging writers, to write for magazines, to write for newspapers, to write for blog sites, and, you know, just cut your teeth on that, get some feedback from editors, and then, you know, then maybe write a chapter in someone else's book. My co-author on Algorithms of Armageddon, Sam Tangredi, who's, I think, won every writing contest the Naval Institute has established, you know, has followed this model, but you know, we tell people, you know, write for publication first, get some feedback, and then move on. And the reason I mentioned Sam is Sam's been the editor of several books where you contribute a chapter. So rather than trying to write a 90,000 word novel, you write a 5,000 word chapter in someone's book. So again, a crawl, walk, run is the primary advice we give.
Yeah, and Proceedings readers will recognize the name Sam Tangredi, and he was the winner of the 2023 General Prize Essay Contest. So Sam took second prize, third prize, a whole bunch of times in that contest, and then this year he won, and his piece on drones or unmanned air systems, unmanned uncrewed weapon systems, is in the March issue of the magazine, so you can come back and find that. So that's excellent advice. Give us some examples of the kinds of things that tend to derail authors. So as you said, you know, you meet somebody in the supermarket, they say, "Rian, I really like to write a novel, right? And I've got this idea. I've got some feed corn in the back of my brain about a story, right? How does somebody succeed in getting from there to the end, and how do people tend to fail?
Yeah, so I think I think most people aren't successful because they haven't done their due diligence. I mean, there are, you know, bookshelves grown under the weight of books that give you advice about writing, how to mm-hmm. develop a plot, how to develop characters, where to insert action, how to balance scene and summary. And you know, I'm not OCD, but a little bit diligent about doing that. So I've read countless books on writing, and that really informed what I did and helped me overcome some of those pitfalls. So yeah, I think the first thing is read about it. And then, you know, the old saying, not all readers are writers, but all writers are readers. So kind of the General Mattis model of, you know, read a lot and you'll see what good prose looks like, and you'll see how people balance scene and summary and whether they use colloquialisms or those sorts of things. So it's kind of a building block approach. And I've had many people send me manuscripts and say, "Hey, would you read my manuscript?" And some of them are so rough. I mean, to be honest with you, they haven't even been spell checked. So there's so many ways you can succeed. It's just a question of doing your due diligence. And those are a lot of the things we point out in the book of what, you know, kind of the must do checklist kind of things.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I'll throw in from the proceedings writing perspective, you know, same thing applies. It helps to try and fail often, try again, right? If you don't get published the first time. One of the things that we look for, particularly with new authors, is we look for the idea. So, you know, you all out there in our audience are the professionals. You're the experts on your, whether you're a submarine officer, a nuclear power trained, enlisted professional, air crewman, F-18 pilot, whatever it is, you're the experts in your area of warfare. And so write about what you know about, write about what you're interested in. And then we will look for the idea. We'll look for is there a novel idea in here? Is there a new a solution to a problem that's posed? And then we'll help you tease it out. We'll help you present it. And sometimes we'll accept it. You know, first article comes in, and we think it's good enough to send to our ed board, and then we send it to the ed board, and then we assign it to an editor, and they'll work with you on getting it into the magazine. And sometimes we'll push it back to an author. We'll just say, hey, this is a good start. You're on a good topic here, but do some more research, right? Here's five or six other articles on this topic that we've published in the last couple of years. Take a look at those and then, you know, go back to the drawing board, or, you know, clean this up, take those ideas and go forward. But it can be a very iterative process. Don't let it get you down. If you get a rejection letter, you know, come back at it again. You got to be a little bit persistent, as you say, George, due diligence, right? Keep working at it. So let's talk a little bit about the business side of publishing, of writing. So as you said, you know, you're the content, the author is the content creator and the content provider, but there's a business aspect of it. A lot of nowadays there's big publishing houses, there's small publishing houses, there's self-publishing. There's, you know, working with an agent or not working, you know, without an agent. So what are the pros and cons of some of those options?
Yeah, no, thanks for that, Bill. So first of all, there's 1.5 million books published every year. And people self-publish. And
is that just in the United States?
In the United States, 1.5 million. And so it's awfully hard if you put something online, you know, with the hopes that people will notice it. I will say there have been exceptions. There's a woman named Colleen Hoover who self-published, and some publisher saw the book, fell in love with it, and she's got a multi-million dollar contract with a big publishing house. But that's the exception, not the rule. So then you go, do you have an agent? Do you have a publisher? The publishing industry has contracted tremendously, as you know. We're down to 5 and probably 4 major publishing houses with their imprints. And they just don't have the staff to go through manuscripts. They used to have something called a slush pile, where they'd have bright 22-year old interns who would go through these manuscripts trying to find the diamond. They don't exist anymore. So typically, the only way to get a book published is to find an agent who can present your book to a publisher, and not just any agent. So most I've been to many writing seminars where they'll bring in agents from the big houses, and they'll start out by saying, I'm interested in romance, young adult fiction, and paranormal. And that's it. And that's their portfolio. And the reason it is they've sold those kinds of books to editors of publishing houses. So, you know, they've got a connection, and there's confidence that if they present those kinds of stories again, they'll be listened to. So you've got to find an agent. So then the question becomes, how do you do that? And the advice we give in the book, and I give to people individually, is your book, as you were describing in the articles, Bill, your book is a certain subject. Let's say it's romance of people who are baby boomers, let's say. So you go to the library and you find books just like yours. And most writers are cordial enough to thank their agent in their acknowledgments. And there's another place in the library where they've got a book with the contact information of every agent in the United States. So you craft a letter to that. And then we go through this in the book, craft a letter to that agent saying, you know, dear so-and-so, I see that you agented Johnny Jones' book, Murder in the Library. And I've got my novel is Murder at the Bus Station, and it's the same genre, but it's better this way, et cetera, et cetera. And then that tells the agent, you know what he represents, you've done your due diligence, et cetera. So that's what's made the most people successful in securing an agent.
No, that's good to know. I will just tell folks, I often get a lot of, you know, military writers who've got a book project or an idea for a book will contact me about the Naval Institute Press. So the press side of the Naval Institute is separate from me. So Adam Kane is the head of the Naval Institute Press. They're the book publishing arm. And Adam has told me, you know, I'm always happy to put people in touch with Adam But Adam has told me a couple of times in the last couple of years that they are primarily only interested in authors who come to them with an agent, or an agent who comes to them with the author, right? Because there is, as I think, as you point out there, George, the agents act as a filter, right? There's a screen, right? The agent's going to read your book. The agent knows what sells. The agent knows what companies will publish, what kinds of things. And so if you work with an agent, you're more likely to get past the gate guard at the press. And if somebody just sends an unbidden manuscript to a press, even a small press like the Naval Institute Press, it's much less likely to be successful than that somebody who works with an agent.
Exactly. Agents have become the gatekeepers as publishing has contracted.
Yeah. Yep. So George, probably time for our one last question. What's a major takeaway from the book?
I think the major takeaway is we're all writers. I mean, Tom Clancy once said that people think that the muse comes and whispers in someone's ear that they should write, but he said it's like playing golf. You practice and it's hard work. So, but writers aren't the special cast of people. And our approach in the book and to the people we give advice to is that it's in our DNA to write. I mean, if you look back tens of thousands of years and the cave paintings that we found, that that was before we had language. And when Ugg went out to kill the saber-toothed tiger and came back, he didn't just throw it on the ground and say, enjoy your meal. You know, he talked about it, or he did pictures to describe the fight. So it's in our DNA, and you don't have to be that special person to write. You just, the secret we try to give people is write whatever you're passionate about. If you're passionate about your Navy career, write about that. If you're passionate about your granddad's service in World War II, you know, write about that. If you're passionate about cooking, write about that. So if you don't have that passion, you probably will stop writing.
That's great advice. Well, George, this has been a great conversation. Good to see you again. And sorry to hear about how the flooding out there in San Diego in February disrupted your home life. But hope you get your house back up to speed. And, you know, as you said, before we started taping here, you're giving it a facelift. So good luck with that. We look forward to seeing you next year when we're out there again for West 2025. Always a good event. George tends to volunteer in the speaker booth and always is there, you know, ready to lend a hand for the Naval Institute at our annual West conference. And George, your book, I'll just say it one more time, Brave Ship Writers Share Their Secrets, How to Write Books People Actually Read, by George Galderisi and Kevin McDonald. So George, congrats on yet another book.
Thank you, Bill, and thanks so much for having me on the show and letting me share our ideas about writing.
Great as always to have you.
Thanks again.
All right. Well, today's episode was brought to you by Valetta Industries. Valetta Industries is a premier maritime and tactical training company founded and comprised of former U.S. Navy SEALs. They offer best-in-class trainers for the Department of Defense and local law enforcement. The Valetta team has a passion for instructing and supporting the mission of active duty personnel and first responders. They lend hard-earned experience to those who still serve. If you're a government contractor looking for a great partner for your next big project, Valetta Industries is an SBA-certified Hub Zone and SDVOSB company. Valetta Industries, we solve problems. To learn more, go to www.valettaindustries.com. And until next episode, remember, victory begins at the Naval Institute.